What's up, everybody? Thanks for listening to the BTOSports.com podcast show. BTOSports.com has teamed up with us to offer you a great deal on your next moto-related purchase. It's easy. Fill up your shopping cart with at least $100 of merchandise and type M-A-T-T-H-E-S in the coupon section during checkout and you are hooked up. One more thing, folks. If you're looking for more Mathis, you're in luck. He's easy to find. Just bookmark PulpMX.com and follow Mathis on Twitter at Twitter.com/PulpMX.
Responsible if it does. What are you gonna do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You have been warned.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross, hosted by Steve Mathis.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com Transworld Motocross Podcast Show. I'm your host, Steve Mathis, as usual. And with me on the line is a guy that's been around a long, long time and doing a lot of jobs in this industry. Probably most of you probably know him as a championship-winning mechanic for Guy Cooper. But I know him as Ross Rollerball Peterson Mechanic. But Marshall Plum, how's it going?
It's going great, Steve. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thank you for doing this, man. I don't even know where to start with a guy like you. Like, there's so much to talk about, so much that you've done. But let's go with what you're doing now. You know, you're still at the races each and every weekend. So let's touch on that, on your business.
Yeah, you know, I actually got a couple things going here. You know, since I quit being a mechanic, on the road, I started my own business, Marshall's Racing, and it's been very successful. We're in our 11th year, and also a couple years after I you know, retired from being a mechanic, I had a phone call from Dunlop, which is a company I've been affiliated with for a long time through racing up in Canada and everything, and mm-hmm. a bunch of great people, and one of the guys, Brian Fleck, his little boy was sick. And he had to take a few weeks off, and they'd asked me to fill in, and that's been almost 8 years ago, and I'm still out there, so.
Yeah, still working away. How's business going? I mean, we had, you know, the industry as a whole has definitely been up and down, more recently down. How's the business going of aftermarket motors and suspension and things like that?
It's, you know, when the economy started to go down, it was, you know, like everybody in the industry, we were kind of sketchy on how it was going to affect us. But believe it or not, the last couple years, year and a half, has been some of our greater years. So mm-hmm. it's kind of weird how it's gone. But I guess fortunately for us, we've been in business for 11 years and a great clientele of customers, and try to keep them happy and try to, you know, keep new customers coming in.
Right. I know from seeing photos, I've never been to Whitney or Swan or Oak Hill or whatever. Seen photos, though, and Texas, and you're based in Oklahoma, and the Texas and Oklahoma amateur scenes are just crazy, huh?
Yeah, it's been there's always been a great turnout of riders. I mean, there's a lot of great tracks in this area. You know, here in Oklahoma alone, we have Cooperland, which was a track that Guy had actually originally started up and has gone through a couple owners. Robbie just bought a track, Renard Raceway, which is, you know, 35 miles from us here. And he was there this weekend for a state series race, and he's doing a really good job. And there's tracks in Texas like Tony Miller's track, Freestone, and you have Oak Hill and some other tracks that are really good tracks. So it's a good area to be in for racing for sure.
Yeah, and I remember a long time ago you told me, or maybe not that long ago, but you did tell me that your job at Dunlop enables you to talk to, you know, some of the top industry people and maybe learn some tricks and some things to do to the bikes to help your shop out. Is that still the case?
Yeah, it's, you know, one thing. I feel very fortunate to have been involved in a sport that's a great sport and a really good family atmosphere sport, even at the professional level. You know, even the amateur level is the same way. And, and I've come across a lot of great people in the sport, and some of the people that, when I was a mechanic, are still in the sport as technical people with their teams. And, I mean, if I ever run into a situation where I need a question answered that I'm unsure of or whatever, I mean, there's always people that are willing to offer their assistance, and I think it's mainly because you've built a great reputation with all the people in within the industry and so on.
Right. Now, this is a hotbed topic, but a guy like you that's been around as long as you have, four strokes or two strokes, what has helped your business more? What is better for business? What's your thoughts on that? I mean, the manufacturers have spoken. I mean, two strokes are almost obsolete now. But as a guy whose livelihood depends on it, what's your thoughts on that?
It's kind of a tough question to answer. But fortunately for me, I grew up in the two stroke era. Spent 24 years of tuning and being around the development of two strokes, and the two strokes are definitely easier from the standpoint of maintaining and everything. The four strokes, I think, business wise has been better financially for us, but at the same time it's harder on the economy and the customer when they don't maintain their motorcycles and they do have problems. A four stroke is very expensive. I think four stroke machinery, contrary to what people think, is a low maintenance motorcycle, but at the level that the bikes are today and with the technology involved, and even more so now with fuel injection and everything coming out, the bikes are fairly high maintenance. They're a higher maintained motorcycle than what our race bikes used to be, you know, 10 or 15 years ago for sure.
Interesting. And I've never asked you this, but how's a guy from Sarnia, Ontario, who worked in an industry based in Southern California and then worked for a shop in Ohio, end up in Oklahoma?
It's kind of, again, like I said, I feel very fortunate, and you know, I need to mention this before, maybe, you know, it's a good time to mention it, but I grew up around motorcycles my whole life, and was very very lucky to have been around some great people back in Sarnia. There's one individual that raced, his name was Dave Beatty. He was a top 10 national expert level rider at all times, and his dad kind of took me under his wings, and I helped them out, and his dad taught me a lot. I likely owe a lot of what I've learned today from him. You know, he was an old race car driver, had a dealership with bikes and cars back in Sarnia, and was very instrumental in helping me get to where I am. Fortunately, worked for his boy, and in the process, there was a young kid that was coming up in Canada. People might have forgot his name was Kevin Moore, and was kind of maybe touted to be the guy to beat Ross at the time. And he rode for Honda Canada, and Honda Canada had actually contacted me to work with him, and we put a deal together for the year. Unfortunately, at the end of that year, Honda's budget program cut back, and at the same time, Kevin kind of just lost interest in what he was doing, and at that time had become good friends with Ross Patterson and was in contact with him, and he was making a switch from Suzuki to Yamaha at the time, and we put a deal together that brought me together for 3 years with him. Very fortunate again to have won I think a dozen championships up in Canada with him, and memories that you'll never forget. Obviously, you're a great fan of Ross. Well, anybody that's known him or been associated with him knows that he's a hard worker. I think if he could come into the sport and the era that we're in today, he'd be a U.S. champion. But that just is going to take a while. But then going from there, I become with Honda Canada back at that time. Bob Hanna used to come up and do some supercrosses and arena crosses, and him and Jeff Hicks. And I got to hang out with those guys and become very good friends. And Bob is, unbeknown to a lot of people, he's the reason I'm here in the U.S. now. He opened the door for me between him and Bevo Forte at Scott, and Bob had contacted me and wanted to know if I wanted to come over and work in the U.S. For American Suzuki, Bob had just started there, and I said, yeah, I would really be interested. And that's how we started the deal with Guy Cooper. He was the rider I was assigned to at Suzuki, which I had a good report with Guy from him coming up to the Canadian races and me being at the U.S. races with Ross. So,
right. Now, that's incredibly fortunate for a guy to just step into a factory job, no doubt about it. Like, I mean, I'm sure you're a good mechanic and everything. Obviously, you were, but that's still pretty good. Not good of Hanna to do that, no doubt.
It was good. I mean, I think I had actually proven myself, you know, obviously working with Ross, went 3 years without any mechanical problems, and and working with Bob when he come up to Canada and everything, you know, and it just kind of hit it off, I guess. And the funny thing is Bob's one of those guys that he's either going to like you or not like you. And I feel fortunate he liked me. And a story, I don't even know if I should say this or not. It's actually in the past now, but Bob put his job on the line at one time to, you know, me being from Canada, I had to get a green card to come into the U.S. And Suzuki wasn't a company that wanted to do that unless you're a Japanese employee or something. So Bob went out on a limb and did some stuff over and beyond what he should have done. And
really?
And partway through, we got we hit a snag, and some people within the company had found out at Suzuki, and we got called in for a meeting. And Bob basically went in and met with Post, which was the man in charge at Suzuki at the time. And before even anything started, Bob had said, you know, if we lose Marshall, then I walk too. And that really? To this day, it's been something that a lot of people I don't know about, but it was very, I mean, it made me feel very special what Bob did. In return, I tried to do something to help him out, but with a man of his nature, it's pretty hard. But I did, I got him a little plaque that, had airplanes and that on it, and a thank you thing with a little clock on it, and I think to this day it's still in his hangar in Idaho. So,
oh, cool. Getting back to rollerball though, because you know that I would. What was that like just working with him? Because, I mean, he went hard off the track as well as on the track from all the stories, and I mean, you guys traveled in '87 when you worked for him. I mean, he got third at Hangtown and a couple of fifths. Did you ever feel like you guys were on the cusp of getting a real factory ride in the U.S.?
You know, it was back in the time when we did that, the sport was a very competitive sport. There's a lot of great riders, Ricky Johnson, Brock Welver, I mean, David Bailey at the time, just a list of them. And it was, I mean, for us to go and get a top 10 every weekend like we did, we mm-hmm. felt that that we accomplished something. And everybody at the time thought Ross was kind of a wild person, but I don't know if it was me or we just had a good relationship, but we kept everything in sync and mm-hmm. and took our racing very seriously. I think you had to at the time to be as competitive as it was and
right.
and everything. And, you know, don't get me wrong, we'd go out and every once in a while and let loose and let the stress out. But for the 3 years that we were together, it was a very dedicated effort. And a couple times Yamaha had actually helped us out with some parts and everything. Keith and Bob and those guys over there were very helpful. Even Larry Griffiths, which was in charge of racing, was very helpful at the time. But I think it was hard to, and today it still is, I think it's very hard to explain to the Japanese why a person on a lower budget is beating
right.
their factory riders. And I think that made it a little bit tough. So
right. I did one of these shows with Ross, he told me that his bike was just, compared to what he was racing against, his bike was, you know, not that good. It was a production bike, you know what I mean? He was racing against Full Works bikes. This was before you started working with him. But and then after that, you know, the production rule came into effect, and it definitely leveled things out a little bit. But he always felt to me like he felt like he was on inferior equipment and was working harder than those other guys. And not a slam against his mechanics or nothing, just the fact. You know?
No, I mean, definitely the equipment that we had back in the day, it was basically mm-hmm. stock equipment. We, you know, very, very thankful we got hooked up with Mitch Payton at Pro Circuit. I'm really, you know, very fortunate to have known Mitch for the amount of years that I have now, but he was very helpful back in the day. He made sure that we had the best cylinders and heads and pipes on our bike, and the better we did, the more work that everybody did together. But
right.
I don't know if I'd say that our bikes were as far superior. I think it's just the budget that we had to develop our stuff on, and in the parts and everything were a lot more limited.
Right.
I think if we would have had a little better bike, I mean, it might have been the difference of finishing fourth or winning or fifth or winning, especially in Supercross. I think suspension held us back more than anything. I mean, at the time, Stig Peterson of Orleans did our shocks for us, and the forks, I basically did them all myself. And, you know, at that time, not very knowledgeable. I mean, being a little bit younger and everything, but I mean, we did a really good job, and I think that, you know, I'm a firm believer that a great rider is going to make up the difference a little bit of the bike, and we've seen that with Ricky Carmichael
mm-hmm.
in his career. He was a very successful racer, and I think it didn't matter what bike you put him on, he was going to win. And I think Ross he had that determination to win, and I think if he had a little bit extra equipment, we would have been a winner in the U.S. as well.
Right, right. A couple of things before we move off of Ross. Best ride you ever saw from him?
You know what? That's a tough question, because I think we had a lot of good rides under our belts. I mean, we did.
You got to give me one or two. You got to give me something.
One that sticks out the most was, I think it was 87. I don't know the year. I mean, it's as you get older, you forget those things. But
not me. Not me. I don't forget Ross's career.
But I've had many more wins and good things after that. But one ride was at Binghamton on our 490 Yamahas.
Mm-hmm.
We got third. We finished third on the podium that day, and the track was a very technical, rocky track, and and Yamaha at that time had been helping us a little bit with the motors. And as people know, that 490 wasn't a it wasn't the best bike on the track, but it had a lot of great qualities that made it a bike that you could win on. And he rode very strong that day, and we got a podium. That would be one, and I think a couple Supercrosses. There's a couple that were very close to the podium. I don't know if that there might have been one that was a podium. It was long ago, but I mean, Seattle was always a great track for us, or Michigan. We had a couple good rides in Pontiac. Ross was a good rider in ruts and everything, and I think that being strong and everything really helps. So
I think people who would follow Ross's career would definitely admit that 86, 87 were probably two of his best years, you know, when you worked for him. He dominated other years, but as far as having success in America and really doing something, 86, 87 was, you know, pretty good for him. He's renowned for his training habits. I tell some guys what Dave Gowan has told me, his other old mechanic that's still around. What kind of stuff did you see from him training? Was it pretty gnarly?
Yeah, you know what? That was one of his very a good asset that he had. But I would say he trained as hard 25 years ago as what people do today. I mean, being good friends with Ricky Carmichael, I've been down at his house and seen how hard Ricky works and it was not uncommon for me to work with Ross, and back then he'd spend a lot of time on the road, and people have heard this story many times, but there's times that I would, he would leave 20 minutes ahead of me and run, and he'd go on a 10-mile run, and I'd pick him up, and, you know, back then he could do a 4.5-minute mile for a long time, which is pretty good. I mean, it was nothing, and that was actually one of the biggest things that made us successful, because, you know, he worked very hard, and as being a mechanic yourself, it's hard to get up and get going week in and week out with the schedules that you have. But when you see a rider working that hard and dedicating himself like that, it's very easy to put in that extra effort and to do the same thing. And that's what makes racing very successful, I think, is a good rider-mechanic relationship. And, when we first started off, me and Ross, I mean, I think there was the first two or three weeks he would, he was a little bit hard to work for, but I kind of, we laid the law down towards each other that, you know, this is a bike, I'll work on it, and you take care of the training aspect. And together we'll make this work. And that's something that I've actually, as we can get on to later with another rider that was a very hard rider to work for. But
I think I know who that is.
sometimes, though, I mean, those are the riders that you cherish the most, because it's more of a challenge, and you make it work, you know. So I think it we had something for 3 years. I just here a couple weeks ago, Carl Bastida was at a race, which was one of Ross's financial people back in the day, who kind of took Ross under his wings. It's out, I think, now, but Ross has been inducted into the Motorsports Hall of Fame up in Canada, and that's coming up at the end of this year here. And I missed. He was inducted into another Hall of Fame up in Canada a couple years ago, and I was unable to make it. But I for sure am going to make it this year. It's out in Vancouver, I think, and it's something that I want to be a part of, because it's, you know, Ross was someone again that opened the door for me to get to where I am today, and I don't forget those things. I mean, they're very special moments in your life, so.
Yeah, I'll have to get with you on that, because maybe I'll make the trip up too. I didn't realize it was a public thing, but okay. So we at the risk of going on and on about Ross, which I could, but let's move on. so you're working for Cooper, and this would have been 1990.
Yeah, it was 1990. I think originally when we put a deal together, when Bob had called me, I was supposed to originally work with Jimmy Gaddis and do an East Coast or West Coast Supercross and that. And then they had hired Guy. It was kind of a last-minute thing, and Guy had actually, I don't know if Guy requested or Bob just thought that I would be the match for Guy, but it you know, I look back at it now, and it's 20 years ago now, but it's the very first year for me being a factory mechanic in the U.S., and our very first outdoor race we won at Hangtown. I think Supercrosses, we had never won a Supercross, but it was the first year we were part of a race in Atlanta that we should have won. I look back at it now, and me being a mechanic, I almost take credit for us not winning it, because it was, at the time, one of the greatest Supercrosses of all time, and I kind of got tied up in the race and was watching Ricky Johnson and Damon Bradshaw and then out of nowhere, Jeff Ward just kind of snuck up and passed us on the last lap, and he was not even in the picture of the race. And
right.
I mean, I think me being a mechanic, that should have been something maybe I should have looked a little farther back on and seen him coming and forewarned Guy. But, I mean, we're very fortunate to, I think we won five outdoor nationals that year, which was almost 50% of them, and we're on the podium three or four times in Supercross, come very close to winning a couple. And I mean, my first year being out there, and then when we did win the championship, we won it by a point. It got stressful near the end and everything, but
yeah.
I mean, to go out there and win a championship, it's at the time when you're young, you don't think as much about it as you do now. But you sit and think of how many years our sport's been around and how many championship mechanics there are, or championship riders, and to be a part of that is, it's very fortunate. I'm thankful until this day, whenever someone wins a race or a championship, I'm the first one to go congratulate them. Like him or not like him, I just know how hard it is to work to win a race, let alone a championship. And when you are part of that, it's you got to thank everybody and appreciate what it is to win them.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, I've never came close to winning one, but yeah, winning races was tough enough for sure. Yeah, so describe what it was like at was it Unadilla the last round? No, Suzuki had dropped down LaRocco and Larry Ward into the 125s to help you guys out. Now, what was that like? What was the tension like? What was the final race like and all that?
Well, we can go back a little bit before that in 1990. At the time, it's when they had combined classes, and those guys didn't ride the 500 class at the time. Suzuki didn't have a 500, so it really wasn't. It was a decision from them more so to ride the 125 class, because they didn't want to sit on the bench at home.
Yeah. Keep paying the guys to do nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, I look back at it now, and you know, there's times that it helped us and times that it hurt us. I think what hurt us more than anything is, you know, John Michelle Bale at the time was in the class, and him and Guy had actually had some very good races.
Yeah.
Heading into Washougal, and at the time we had actually come out with the New Year model bike, which was 1991 model bike, and we started riding it at Washougal. I'm not sure if it was the right decision or the wrong decision, but a corporate decision, and the bike was a great bike. It just wasn't developed as much as the previous year. And at that race, John Michelle Bell broke his wrist, and we left Washougal with a 61-point lead. And
right.
Really, you know, to have that big of a points lead halfway through the season, you kind of you can coast a little bit. And then Guy started doing some training stuff and taking some different vitamins prescribed by some trainers and everything that really didn't work for him, and our 60-point lead went went dwindling away pretty quick. And then we went into Steel City, and at that time, Ronnie Tischner was riding for Suzuki, and they had just let him know that he wasn't going to be back next year, the previous upcoming year. And he made it tough for Guy to get around, and then Guy got off the track and hit a rock, and in our bike, the only DNF we had, and a rock went through the cases and everything. So we by the time we left Steel City at that time with three rounds left to go, we were 1 point behind, I think. And
to Kudrowski
at the time, and he had actually started to get some John Michelle's parts that he had, I think, that were a little better. And our bike was a great bike in 1990. And it, man, I'll tell you, at the time I come back to Oklahoma, and this is where I'm at now. I spent a lot of time. We had a 2.5 week break. I come back here, and I was bound and determined we weren't going to lose the championship. I kind of come back and kept Guy. His confidence up and everything, letting him know that we could win it. And
right. And
I knew going into Unadilla, this is another kind of, it's a, I look back at it today and it might have been the difference, but we'd split motos with Kudrowski at Bud's Creek, and I can't remember where the other race was. It was Bud's Creek, and God, you know.
Is it Southwick?
No, Southwick was earlier then, because we had won Southwick. But it was Bud's Creek in another round, and then we went to might have been Binghamton, Bud's Creek, and anyways, we went into like I said, into that round we'd split motos. But I knew Unadilla was going to be a deciding factor of winning or losing a championship with Dale, with Kudrowski, or without. And the previous year, Guy had struggled at Unadilla, so I had requested to Ron Heben, our team manager, and Bob at the time, that we do they had a GP at Unadilla that year, and that we ride the support class, because I knew Dale was going to be there, and so on. And I just wanted to make sure we had a good bike set up going into the very last race, and we could use it as a testing ground, if not anything else, for some good settings. And Guy didn't want to go. It was something he didn't want to do at the time, and I had kind of went behind his back and told Suzuki that we had to make him go for that purpose.
Well, that's a good reason. Yeah, it's a good reason.
You know, and we did it, and believe it or not, we went out first moto, and he actually beat Dale on a track that was a great track for Dale, and was chasing him down the second moto, and Dale actually roosted a rock and hit Guy's wrist, and it never hurt him, but it left a big knot. Until this day, it's still on his wrist. But
that
was a confidence builder for Guy going into the last round. That we could win, and we did. Like I said, have a 2001 bike. So at that race, we
91 went, 91 bike.
Or, yeah, 91. Yeah, okay. Sorry,
tons. You had a 2001.
Yeah, it'd be nice, wouldn't it? But anyways, in 90, we had the 91 bike. We did go back to a 1990 chassis, because we went to the setup that we had rode at Unadilla, and it worked really good. And
that's funny, because I could have swore those 90 and 91 bikes were the same basic bike with new plastic, like just from an outside point of view, you know.
The 91 chassis was more of a square frame chassis compared to the 90 rounded frame. So the motor stuff and everything was very, very consistently the same as the 90 bike, but the chassis was different. So we just wanted to go back to something we knew that we were comfortable with, and it was a lot of work leading up to that race. But going into it, I look back at it now, and it was the right decision. I think first moto we went out, and this is something that, again, Bob, as people know Bob, he's very, he didn't hold anything back, and we're on the starting line for the first moto at Unadilla, and just coincidentally, the Rockwell started beside us.
Right.
That model, in which was, or actually, Larocco started beside Kudrowski, sorry. And then Bob went up to Kudrowski and said, I just paid Larocco to cut over on you off the start, you know, just to, you know, which Bob was good at through his career. And
right.
Man, believe it or not, we actually whole shot the moto, and Kudrowski was way back. And we, I think Guy won the moto. I don't remember who second was, but Kudrowski was third. Maybe Larocco was second, I think, at the time, and Kudrowski was third. And that gave us a cushion to where we just had to finish behind Kudrowski, the second moto, when we win the championship. Well, we got, you know, the second moto, Guy went down on the start and in the mud and got up almost dead last and put a charge on. And I was pretty nervous that whole moto, but we got up as he started getting up into the front of the pack. You know, some of the guys like Chicken and Brian Swink at the time, those guys never put up a fight because they all had a lot of respect for Guy. I think Guy built a lot of respect from all those guys. And then, believe it or not, I think Larocco was running second and Kudrowski was winning the moto. And Larocco got a flat.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidentally, he got a flat. I mean, obviously, I think he would have let Guy go by anyways at the time, but he had actually had about 8 or 10 seconds on us, so it would have been kind of funny for him to just kind of do what he did. But he did have a flat and lost a lot of time and come up, got second, won the championship by a point. And it's one of my highlights in my career, obviously, when you can win an outdoor championship and being your first year out there, definitely a highlight. So
yeah. How did you get along with Cooper? I mean, I imagine pretty good. He seems, I know him a little bit. He seems like a good guy. What was he like to work for? Did you guys get into it at all, or were you totally buddies the whole time? Or,
you know what? I don't think the whole time we're together we had any differences. I mean, he was kind of a jokester and I was kind of a jokester. We kind of hit it off pretty good. Again, it's, you know, it's business. I mean, it was, we had a goal to win championships and try to win races, and there's some differences. Every once in a while he'd want something different or whatever, but you know, we'd sit down and discuss it in a professional business matter, and we'd always resolve the situation. And and I think, you know, as you see today with mechanics like Goose and everybody, and you being a mechanic, the relationship you had with Timmy, those relationships are what makes it successful. I mean, if you and the rider mechanic can get along like a marriage, and like any marriage, you have your differences, but a successful marriage, you work it out. And I think it's the same with a rider mechanic relationship. I mean, hard work pays off, and it shows in the long run.
Yeah, no, for sure. Funny that you mentioned that, for him being such a good guy and all, it must have pained you to never win a supercross, or it must have pained him too, because even when he was at Honda, he led a bunch, you know what I mean? And he's never able to win one. And he retired shortly, what, 93? 93?
I think 95 was his last year of professional racing. I look back at it and, we never, you know, me as a mechanic, I've never won a supercross. I mean, I always used to joke with Carmichael I wanted to go out and work one race with him so I could say I won a supercross, but never did win a 250 supercross, won a lot of 125s, but something I look back at and wish that I had accomplished, it's one thing that I never got to accomplish. I mean, Guy being the rider that he was a crowd favorite, and he would be the last one to leave the races all the time. And again, a lot of people, there's times I hated it, but you know what? I mean, it's part of the job, and it pays off to have a fan following, because I think it makes the rider successful at the races as well.
And another thing to mention too, like, and I really noticed this because when I worked for Timmy the first time, it was in a box van, and when I worked for Way, it was in a box van. The days when you worked as a mechanic, those were box van days. Well, Honda Troy, you were in a semi, but you had a different relationship with your rider. A lot of times they stayed back with you, or you went to their houses in between weeks or whatever. So it was almost, it was just really a team of you and him. It wasn't so much like you see now with a motor guy and a suspension guy and a team manager and a trainer and a riding coach, you know. It really was way more of a hands-on thing between a mechanic and a rider. So I imagine, you know, you and Guy spent a lot of time together, just like you and Roller.
Yeah, we spent, you know, there's a lot of time, like I said, that we would, I'd come back to Oklahoma. There's, in 1990, I mean, we tested a lot. I mean, we tested, mm-hmm. if there was 12 outdoor races, I think we tested 8 or 10 of them before the race, with Bob coming in or Ron Heben, and we did a lot of development and a lot of, you know, maybe not making our bike any better, but to make sure we had the best every weekend at that event. And like I said, a lot of hard work goes mm-hmm. goes into it. And I look back at it now, and I mean, you know, it just took a lot of hard work and dedication. There was times that the whole team would go testing, and everybody would be gone, and we'd be there an hour or two later. And a lot of it was more me, I think, than than even the rider or the other team personnel, because I wanted to excel and win. And I know one time before Southwick, we're out testing in New Hampshire, and we tested 8 or 9 shocks, and none of them really worked the way we wanted them to. And at the time, the next day, a couple more, 4 more into us to try. And man, I knew what they were, and the guy didn't want to. He wanted to quit testing. And I said, man, we got to try these last two. You just never know. And believe it or not, the last shock we put on ended up being almost 3.5 seconds a lot faster at the track. And Kudrowski was up there riding, uh-huh. and it was almost 3.5 seconds faster than his time. So mm-hmm. we knew going into Southwick that, man, we're gonna be a contender, and we ended up winning. And
right.
I mean, it just, any time you work hard and you get rewarded for it, it makes it a lot easier to continue to do that.
Yeah, to keep working hard the next time. So how long were you at Suzuki, and how long did you work with Guy for?
I worked with Guy for 2 years at Suzuki, and then they hired Brian Swink. And it's kind of a, you know, I look back at it today, and it was a decision that I didn't have an option at the time, I don't think. But when they hired Brian, I was back at Guy's house, or actually where I live right now, believe it or not. And mm-hmm. he was acting kind of different, and I was like, what's going on? You know, am I going to have a job next year, you know, yeah. let alone, are you going to have a job? And he says, well, I mean, I know you're going to have a job. He says, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but this is going to be our last year together. And I go, why, you know? And he goes, well, they hired Brian Swink, and they're going to put you on with him, you know, with the knowledge that I had and everything, I guess.
All
and
right.
I look back at it, and I made that decision to work with. I mean, I don't know if I would have balked the system if I could have changed it or not, but mm-hmm. I mean, they basically said, you're going to work with Brian. And at the time, Brian was a very up-and-coming star. He was him and Jeremy were the two up-and-coming racers at the time that were going to be a success story. And from a career standpoint for me, and to be able to continue racing and winning races, it could have been a great decision. But as we all know today, it just didn't work out, you know. So
right. Yeah, I did one of these with Swink not too long ago. I don't know if you ever heard about it or heard it. And he, you know, he basically, he rused the day that he switched to Suzuki. He went for the money. It was a lot of money. And, you know, he said that the bike worked okay in Supercross, but outdoors it didn't work. The 250 didn't work. And, you know, he really regrets signing with Suzuki. Not anything because of you or anything like that, just the bike wasn't ready, he felt. And he looks back on that, and he definitely regrets taking the money for Suzuki, because Mitch was like, hey, just sign with me one more year and stay with me one more year, and maybe Honda will have an opening or whatever, you know?
Yeah, you know what? It's like we say now, you can always say, mm-hmm. say what would have, could have, or should have been. But right. I still look back at it when I worked with him. And you know what? Brian, his family, and everybody was a family to me. It was just a great, they took me in like I was a big brother, mechanic and everything for Brian. And
right.
I think that, again, our bike wasn't the best bike on the track compared to the Honda. The Honda at that time had a great bike. But I think we could have still won on the bike had a couple things went a little differently. And
right.
and maybe Brian's mindset was a little differently, you know. But yeah. like you say, that's in the past now. And I still very, very, very well think that we could have won. It just a couple things went left instead of going right. And at that time, things went the right way for Jeremy, and you can see where he become one of the most successful supercross riders in the sport, you know. So
thank you for listening to this podcast. Now it's time to pay some bills.
Thanks for listening to the BTOsports.com podcast show. Please don't forget that BTO is the world leader in aftermarket motocross parts for the bike or body. You'll find deals like a Shoei VFXW helmet for $309.99, 45% off, or Smith Piston goggles for $32.99, 65% off. Your order can be shipped anywhere in the USA for free, or if you're not in the USA, we ship worldwide. Check it out at btosports.com.
You did win an East Coast title with them.
Yeah, I mean, we won an East Coast Supercross. Was a very we won a lot of races. It was a championship that I knew that we could win and almost win every race going in. Just maybe a little arrogant at the time, but Brian was just that good of a rider that it was kind of like working with the Ricky Carmichael. You knew you were going to win unless something went wrong. And a lot of people don't know this. And everybody, Brian takes a bad rap for a lot of stuff, you know, maybe not training hard or working hard, but a couple things went wrong in 91 that weren't really of his doings. Maybe, our bike wasn't the best bike on the track. It was a hard bike to go mm-hmm. to go through the loop suspension. The chassis wasn't that good compared to the Honda. But we made the best, and we're going into Seattle, which I think was the third round of that year, the fourth round. I can't remember. But we almost, Jeremy had won the week before for his first race, and mm-hmm. at the time I told Larry Myers, that which was announcing and everything, I said, one of these two guys or both of them are going to be a dominant force this year, over Stanton and all them, and
right.
and he kind of didn't believe me. But anyways, Brian kind of come from the back and chased down Jeremy in Seattle, and Brian was really methodical on what he did on the track, and he had Jeremy set up and had actually made the pass, but then going into the next corner, a lapper, actually Cliff Palmer, which is a good friend today, but got in the way, which is just a racing incident, and it cost us a win, and it, Brian, maybe his attitude wasn't the greatest back then, it got very, he was upset. But anyways, we were going back to Tampa the next weekend, and that next week, early in the week, he actually hurt his wrist, thought he broke it, and weren't even sure we were going to race Tampa. It was that bad, but he'd actually had a little brace made up, and we were going to try and race, and he looked practice. He looked okay, and this is where a point that me being a mechanic, you win and you lose together, but
right.
we were testing some motor stuff, and Suzuki had sent in a new motor like the day before the race, and I've always been one against not putting something on a bike that's not proven, but they sent a complete motor, just said put it in, you have to race with it. So we did that, and we had a problem with the motor. It had a different part on it. It had a bunch of lightweight titanium stuff in the motor, and mm-hmm. one of the bolts was I put the bulk in, so that's where I say I take the blame. That was one thing that I did put in at the last minute, and it didn't have the right thread pitch to match the other. It was the right threads to work, but just wasn't right, and it just anyways, in the first heat race, Brian was winning, and I think we definitely would have won that, but with a lot to go, the bike just quit, and we had to run back to the pits, and at that time, you didn't have time to troubleshoot anything, so we put another, they'd sent us two motors, so we put the second motor in and went out into the semi, and Brian had complained there was something wasn't right with that motor, but it was, again, there's two motors that they'd shipped in, and
right.
Again, you being a mechanic, you got to take responsibility for that, and the scheduling just didn't give us time to do anything, but anyways, that motor didn't work right, and we couldn't figure it out because you didn't have time between the semi and the last chance, and we didn't have another motor to put in it at the time, so we went out again, and it ended up being that he, going into the last chance qualifier, he fell into the first turn, and we didn't qualify for that race, and I mean, I think that was a turning point in his career. Had he made it through that weekend with, had he won that heat race, the confidence that he would have had might have continued on, and we might have won a lot of races that year, but it didn't happen. And a lot of people don't know what happened back then, and they put all the blame on Brian. But I think it was, man, you win as a team, you lose as a team, and we all have to take responsibility. I mean, me being the mechanic, I fully take responsibility for that. And I mean, it could have been what made, you know, not likely, but it could have had an influence of what made the career go the wrong way, you know. So, I mean, that's just, but that's racing. I mean, you know, I've been around long enough to know there's been a lot of talented riders that have not succeeded in racing compared to the ones that don't have the talent, you know. So,
yeah. No, I remember that race in Seattle where he was all over MC. I do remember that. Yeah, you're right. Very talented rider. I don't think you'll find anybody from back then that would tell you that the Brian Swink wasn't one of the most talented riders on the track every time he went out. But so you worked for Swink in 91 and 92?
Actually, 92, 93.
Oh, 92, 93. Okay.
Yeah.
And then what about after 94?
Actually, at the end of 93, and I think Brian might have even, you know, I never heard his full interview with you, but, man, midway through 1993, we both weren't really happy at Suzuki because we wanted to win, and at that time, it just wasn't the company as far as testing, and we didn't have the greatest of parts. And I had actually sat in a meeting one time, and, you know, Brian was supposed to be the superstar, so every weekend I got called into meetings or got phone calls from upper management. And, you know, after you do that for a year and a half and nothing changes, I kind of got upset, and I just basically said, if nothing changes, I was really bucking the system. And,
right.
And Bob had told me when I got hired at Suzuki, he says, you don't buck the system or you're going to get bucked, you know. And I at the end of 93, I got bucked, you know. I mean, you know what? I look back at it now, and it's, I mean, if I wasn't able to win at the races, I really didn't want to be there, you know. And,
right.
And I thought I had something within another manufacturer, and it kind of went to the wayside, so I was kind of left on the outside, you know, in 94, and then it's kind of, I get a phone call from Larry Ward, which at the time was riding for Noli and Yamaha, and we did the Supercross season. I planned on originally doing the whole year with Noli, but the deal that we had made financially wasn't, you know, partway through Supercross, wasn't being funded to me at the time the way it was explained to be. And, you know, I started to become unhappy, but, you know, we made it through Supercross, and believe it or not, it was one of Larry Ward's better Supercross seasons on the Nolan Yamaha that year. We were very, we ran up front, top four or five. It was kind of like the rollerball days again, you know, but right. I had some good bikes and everything, but we went into outdoors, and it just, man, it didn't work. And at that time, it was Supercross and outdoors at the same time. And I just come Daytona, I had actually put my toolbox in another vehicle and headed back home. You know, I was like, this just isn't working out.
Really, I didn't know that, huh? So you
were, yeah. wasn't sure what I was gonna do. You know, and then just out of the blue, I get a phone call from Ron Heben. And he had at the time had worked for Chicken, which was a privateer on a Yamaha the same year. And him and Larry were having some good battles, you know, as both being privateers that year. And he had just taken a job at Team Green to go work with them and had to leave Chicken out in the blue. And they had a great relationship and asked me if I would work with Chicken for the rest of the year. And was very, you know, what the heck, this will work out, which was kind of weird because him and Larry having the battles, and I went from one to the other, really wasn't the greatest maybe things for Larry. But even leaving Larry, we had a good relationship at that time. It just, he'd offered to even make up the difference in pay and everything, but I just was unhappy enough to where I left. But I put the deal together with Chicken, and we had some good finishes. And
NCY Yamaha?
On NCY Yamaha, correct, yeah. Yes, with Herkman and all them, and Herkman was a great person to work with. But believe it or not, that 4 or 5 months that I worked with Chicken, we did it basically out of a back of a rental car or a box van, you know, someone else's vehicle. But it was pretty successful. I had a good relationship with Yamaha. And working with Jeff and his parents were... Man, I'll tell you what, his parents are a very class act. His mom at the time was paying me, and she made sure I was taken care of over and beyond what we even agreed upon. And it was, again, very fortunate to have been around a lot of great people, you know, So
that's funny that you tell that story, because it sure sounds like mine. Like at KTM, I was frustrated with things at KTM, and I thought I had another deal with another factory team, and I basically was told I had the deal, so I maybe burnt a bridge at KTM when I was on my way out, and then the deal fell through, and then I was kind of left without a job, and then I got lucky and worked for Nick Way at Moto Triple X. But then your Nolene job, I mean, when I went to Nolene, it was the same thing. I was promised way more than what I got, and there were more than a few frustrating times at Nolene waiting for to get paid or waiting for expenses to come in or whatever. So just when you're telling that story, it sounds a lot like mine.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of funny. It's not at the time, you know, Clark Jones was the owner of Nolene and is a great person. I had a great relationship with him and his family. At the time, he had two girls and a little boy. They were very young, but, I mean, they treated me well. It just, you know, it's hard to have a privateer-type team out there. I mean, there's still a lot of them today, and obviously it costs a lot more money today. To fund a team like that, but there's still a lot of them that aren't as successful as they could be, I don't think, just because of financial reasons. And it takes a lot of money to put a team together, you know. Trust me, I've wanted to do one for a while, but being around it as long as I have been, I know that it's not something I want to do, you know. So
right. Okay, so the end of 94 comes, Chicken, you're out with him. I think he retires. Does he go somewhere else?
Yeah, Chicken, that was pretty well it for Chicken. It didn't. He just wanted to give it one more try to see how it went. And he actually went to Japan at the end of went over and won some championships, Japanese championships. But at that time, again, like I said before, I had a very good relationship with Brian and his family, and still to this day, I respect every one of their family members, and I could call them tomorrow and they'd be right there for me. They're like a second family, and long story short, Brian had you know, decided he'd had enough at Suzuki and needed a change. And at that time, Phil Alderton was starting up Honda of Troy, and they had actually hired Eric Kehoe to be a team manager and everything. And Brian asked me if I wanted to go there and work. And I mean, it wasn't for a lot of money the first year, because it was was going to be their first year of a team of that status and have some riders. But I, you know, Brian was very good to me at Suzuki with bonuses and everything. So right. I'd agreed to do it, and we put the Troy deal together. And I mean, we had some good rides. And it's something that, man, I'll tell you what, that team in 95, 96, 97 was, it was a caliber of a pro circuit team. And we had a lot of help from pro circuit at the time. And, you know, a great team manager, Eric Kehoe, obviously Phil was one awesome team owner. You know, I mean, it was a very good team to work for. A lot of great people. The next year they'd hired Dan Bentley to do suspension, and I think you know, at that time we had some of the best suspension on the track, and learned a lot. I even learned some stuff from Dan, suspension related, that got me into what I'm doing today. So I think it we never won any races there. We were on the podium in Supercross three or four times, and had some good outdoor finishes, but again, it just, the drive wasn't there from Brian to succeed at what he had to succeed at. And I mean, it's nothing against Brian. I mean,
was he number 10 that year? Would he have been number 10?
Yes, we were. We were actually, I think the first year in 95, we were 23.
Okay.
And then we went and got number 10 the next year, I think it was. Or it might have been vice versa. It's funny, I'm sitting here in my house looking at a picture of Brian in Supercross, number 23 on his bike. It's kind of a picture I have sitting in my house. I mean, it's not many pictures I have. I got one of him and one of Guy. And it just, again, it didn't work out. You know, it was kind of, and it wasn't from an effort of not everybody trying. It just, I think, Brian, that it just wasn't meant to be for him to be a champion in racing, you know, and it didn't work out. I mean, a lot of great memories and everything. I mean, we had our spats near the end of his career just because I didn't think he was putting the effort in. And I tried everything as far as being the nice guy and trying to explain to him, and then always going, hey, that was a good ride, we'll do better next weekend, till the end of actually just saying, you know, I'm going to try reverse psychology here and maybe fire it up by trying something different. But I mean, it didn't work, and I mean, it's just one of those things that, you know, life goes on, and you win some, you lose some. It didn't happen. And at the end of, I think it would have been 96, they let Brian go. They just, he had 2 years at Troy, 95, 96, and didn't live up to their expectations, and they wanted to go forward. Another funny story, Larry Ward was available in 1997.
So another one of your old riders comes into the mix.
and I got reunited. And man, contrary to what people think, and, you know, it's like we had talked about earlier, Larry Ward is, he was an awesome person. I mean, he was really finicky with his bike. I think he matured a little bit as he got older. You know, I caught him at a right time, but I'd always grown up around Larry because he was at Suzuki when I was there, and I seen some of the stuff he tried to to make happen, and just sat back and observed and going, man, I think if he did this different, then it would be different. But we had to compete against him, and he was talented, so I wasn't going to say anything. But we got hooked up together in 97, and we sat down, and I told him, I said, man, I've seen you pull into the mechanics area, and I've seen you do stuff, and you know, I go, you know what? I don't want that to happen. If we can work together as a team, we're going to be very successful. If you have a problem and it's a legit problem, you let me know and we'll fix it. And that's the year that Dan Bentley come on board, and Larry was a hard guy to get suspension to work for. And you know what, Dan performed some magic, and we all put together what we thought was would work for him. And man, it's one of the most successful years as a mechanic that I had. I mean, we never won any races. We come very close. We were second a lot, but we finished third and fourth, respectively. Fourth in Supercross, third in outdoors that year. And I mean, for a team of our status of that class, we were the top Honda rider almost every weekend back then. And it just memories that I look back at, going, you know, it was a challenge to work for him. We knew that, and it was
right.
It made it exciting, and we were very successful at it. So
there was one guy at Honda, Troy, a mechanic that. He just, I think he drove the guy to an insane asylum. Was that after you or before you? Or?
I think it was the year before me, because Larry was there in 96 as well. And
who was that guy? I forget his name.
Sean Persinger.
Sean, yes.
Yeah.
They did not mesh, those two.
No, well, you know what? Again, me being... I mean, and still to this day, it's something that I tell people. I mean, I wasn't... Man, I wasn't. I mean, I have no degrees in engineering or anything like that, and there's still a lot of things that maybe I don't understand how it works sometimes. But I try to figure it out, and I've been around long enough in the sport that you gain a lot of knowledge just by experience. And I think I used that experience that I'd had with all my riders. And when we hooked up with Larry Ward, I just knew how to explain things to him and make it work in a business way again, that we made it successful. And I look back at it, and there's a lot of good memories working with Larry, a lot of good memories with all my riders, but a lot of them with Larry were very good. And Larry still is someone that will come out of his way to say hi at the races all the time. And all my riders have been good. It'd be hard to pick which one was the best, because very fortunate they all were good, you know?
I was on Larry's team, too, Moto Triple X in 02, and I got nothing but fond memories of him, because he was a really funny guy and a good guy to be around. But I don't know, Marshall. I don't know if I'd want to work for him. You must have had the magic touch, because he drove the guy at Triple X crazy, too.
You know what's funny? He left to go to Suzuki and worked with Lee over there, right. I think he drove Lee crazy, but I don't know if I just – it was just the way we approach things. And there's some – trust me, there are some times where he'd have those little finicky moments and didn't want to do this or didn't want to do that. But I'd always kind of put him in line and say, hey, this is how it is. Or prove to him the right way that – or we didn't do it the wrong way, you know. And it just I was kind of, to believe it or not, when Larry had such a great successful year in 97 that he went to Suzuki in 98. And it was, trust me, it was hard, because I didn't want to lose him, because I wanted to have another year or two out on the circuit. And, he got his job at Suzuki, and obviously with, bucking the system like I did 4 or 5 years previous, it was likely going to be hard to go back there and that. But, I mean, again, I'd like to, you know, Suzuki as a company, it's a family to me. I mean, I've been worked with a lot of teams and a lot of people, but, man, I respect what Suzuki did at the time, and till this day, it's been a family. I even went back and worked for him for 3 years with their off-road team with Mike Webb, and they still to this day, I could walk into Suzuki's trailer at their races, and I'm treated like I'm part of their team still. So, I mean, something I just wanted to slip into here because it was, and you know what, Suzuki's a very successful team the last 7 or 8 years, and Roger had a big influence. Roger come right after I left, and I wish I'd have been there with Roger because I think Roger's a very smart individual, and Roger got things done that maybe we couldn't get done years previous because of what of his a knowledge and him being a Suzuki rider back in his day that with some of the Japanese people. But anyways, that's back there in that. But I don't know. Larry Ward was. He wasn't really that hard of a person to work for me. I mean, maybe I was lucky. Maybe that's why I have no hair today or whatever. But, I have nothing bad to say about any of my riders. And you know, I had one more rider after Larry, which was a different experience for me, but at the same time, a good experience, you know?
Yeah, and let's not forget, too, the 97 CR250 wasn't exactly an incredible motorcycle.
No, believe it or not, that was likely one of the worst motorcycles that they had built. You know, I mean, yeah. Jeremy didn't like it. I mean, nobody really liked it that year, but for some reason, Larry messed with that bike. I mean, be it whatever it was, he just, he messed with it and had some, it was a bike for him, you know, and everything. So it just be perfect timing or whatever, but maybe if you'd have been like everybody else that didn't like the bike, it might have been a year from hell or something. But it was a year that I was excited to go to the races every weekend. I still wanted to be a part of it, and you know, we flew back then. That's when one of the first couple of years of the trailers, and it got to work with guys like Dean Baker. Me and him actually roomed together for a couple, 2 or 3 years at Honda Troy, and is a great person. And
Dean's cool.
And he's very instrumental in his role at where he's at now at JGR, as well as when he was at Cowie and KTM, and even at Troy and so on. You know, so.
I forgot he worked at KTM. I forgot about that. That's right.
He went to KTM for a little bit. So, I mean, you know, I think, you know, Dean was young, and I had a little bit of experience, and, you know, he fed off of me, but at the same time, I fed off of him a little bit because he had some good ideas and everything. So,
who'd you work for the next year? What was that?
The next year after Larry left, I was kind of, I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. You know, I was kind of, like I said, I was bummed that Larry had left. And, you know, at that time, I was been on the circuit for a long time. I really wasn't sure. And I sat down with Eric and Phil at the time, and I said, I don't know if I want to do this, and they give me an increase of pay, and it made things great for me. And anyways, I got hooked up with Mike Craig, which again is another rider that had a ton of talent.
Good God, Marshall, you worked for a lot of kooks.
You know what? I don't know if I call them kooks. You know, believe it or not, I mean, again, I don't know if it's just the way I took things or the way I approached it, but was very open-minded. I mean, again, I've been around all these guys and watched them grow up and do things, and we started off pretty good. We had 2 or 3 podiums the first couple of races, and was riding really good, and you know, I think Mike had an attention span that was 5 or 6 races long, and then it started kind of, you know, the tactics that he had actually tried at other places started to come out, and it just started to go downhill a little bit. And then, you know, we went into an outdoor race halfway through the season at Bud's Creek, and Mike broke his femur real bad. It's one of the the crashes that was on TV that they had to edit part of it out because of how his leg was on the TV and all that. But
wasn't he winning for a little bit? Didn't he?
He actually was another pretty good rider to work for. I think I had a lot of respect for the riders I worked with, and they had a lot of respect for me, and I think that might have been part of why we were successful. But he broke his femur, and it was halfway through 98, and I had almost, I had always told myself that, you know, everybody would ask, when are you going to quit being a mechanic, or when do you know? And I always said to myself, I said, you know what, if I can't put in 100% every weekend, it's time to call it quits. And I just, there's times that I didn't even want to go to the airport to get on a plane. I was like, maybe I'll miss this flight, you know? And that was time for me to make a change. And I actually left that season a little bit early, didn't go to a lot of races. I, believe it or not, the whole time I was a mechanic, I'd never missed a race.
Really?
Never missed one, and I missed four or five then. And coming in, and Phil was very, very gracious and paid me till the end of the year, and I finished out the '98 season. And I had partway through '98 decided I wanted to start my business back here in Oklahoma, and it was going to be tough, but I thought it was time. And We did it, and and then some deals had come. This is actually going longer than you likely wanted, but I had put a deal together with Mike Webb from Suzuki. Had actually called me, and he had an off-road team and wanted a mechanic, and it just actually worked out perfect because it was more of a part-time, you know, GNC series. I think they did 12 or 14 races, and they took the summer off, and it was every other weekend, so it was really good for me, and it financially it helped out starting out my business, and and some good credibility and everything, and some kept me within the loop, and did that for 3 years, worked with Steve Hatch for the last 2 years, and then Paul Edmondson the first year. And I won a GNCC, and we had actually, from a standpoint of a mechanic, I feel, like I say all the time, I feel fortunate, but I was able to win in motocross, not in supercross, but won a GNCC, and actually even worked for Jeff Ward in the supermoto race in Texas 1 year, and we won that. So, I mean, just kind of...
Right.
I mean, for me, but I look at it now, it's, you know, years later, but I think as a mechanic, if I had to pat myself on the back, which I don't like to do, but I don't think I was ever out of the top 10 in any series that we ever competed in as a mechanic, even if it was a privateer or whatever. So I think that's winning all the races we won or championships, that's kind of something that I'm more proud of, you know. So
right. And also too, like, I get people asking me about when I quit, and there wasn't really one thing, or I just knew it. You know what I mean? Just kind of like you just know it. You're just kind of over it. You're just looking for a new challenge, maybe, is what the word is. But I just knew it. I knew that it was going to be my last year, and I was out. So
yeah, it's something you know yourself. And, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I don't know. It's just one of those deals where when you're within the, I mean, the sport of motocross is my life. It's my, everybody at the races is family. And even till this day, I mean, the day that I have to walk away from it the second time and do what I, you know, with the Dunlop deal or whatever it is, right, it's going to be hard. Going to be hard because, man, I've met a lot of great people. You know, the people that we're affiliated with at Dunlop, man, what a great bunch of people. I mean, it's led with Brock Lover, which is likely one of the greatest of all times, but never really got the recognition that he should have. you know, working with Brian Fleck, a very knowledgeable person within tires, mm-hmm. been with them up for a long time. And we got a good group of tire fitters. You know, we got Brady Becker, John Turner, our truck driver, Steve Nichols. I mean, everybody's just a great, it's a family, and it's fun to, for me, it's, believe it or not, I get excited going to the races still every weekend. So.
Oh, right on. Yeah. Plus, I mean, you worked for the Rollerball, Marshall. I don't got to remind you.
Yeah, but believe it or not, I wish I was in contact more with Ross, but, right. You know, I mean, even meeting people like you, I mean, trust me, my years of mechanic, the press will either, they say they make or break you, but you know what, I had a lot of good press, I had some bad press, but
I had
a couple times, you know, I mean, I think one time at Redbud, I put a sign up that, which is common today, which is kind of funny, but team personnel only, because I worked with Brian, uh-huh. and we just had a lot of followers that you couldn't get your job done. So I put a sign up that said team personnel only. And
MXA took a photo of it, didn't they?
That's right, and they made a big deal out of it. But you know what? I mean, I was there to wasn't there to make friends. I was there to win races and in that. But I mean, there was a lot of great people. I don't think I don't think I made an enemy within the racing. You know, so that's something I'm proud of.
I think I can vouch for that because I haven't been around as long as you, but I can't think of anyone that said a bad word about Marshall Plum. I can find somebody who said bad words about me, but nothing about Marshall Plum.
Well, you know, a lot of that's just, I had a good upbringing from my parents, and just I always, man, even today in my business or whatever I do, I put myself in other people's shoes and think what they would do or what they'd want to be done. And I just appreciate what everybody does. I mean, you look at the races today and, you know, you got some good riders out there and, you know, you have guys like Chad Reed that are struggling. But you know what? I mean, there's people say good and bad about someone like Chad, and I always told people that he's not been a person that I've ever gotten to know. But this year I've talked to him a little bit, and mm-hmm. man, I respect what he has done as a racer. I mean, if I had to pick a team and put a rider on there, he'd be one of my top picks, because I think he'd give guys like Ricky Carmichael and James Stewart a lot of headaches in their career, and not too many riders can do that. So, I mean, just to be around all those people, I've been around a great... my whole career, champion Stanton, just Marty Smith, you know, all those guys. And I mean, you sit back and look at it, it's just been it's been a lot of fun. I mean, heck, you can't ask anything better, you know?
Right, right. Well, this podcast has been a lot of fun. Thank you for doing it. I appreciate it. Where can people go to find more information about your shop and all the things that you do?
You can go to marshallsracing.com. We have a website out there. It has all the information you need and everything. And, I guess in closing, I'd just like to, thank you for doing this podcast. It's been a lot of fun. Thank all the people, the riders and families that I have worked for in the previous years, and here thank everybody at Dunlop and mm-hmm. man, everybody with all the factory teams. Like, with something we didn't get to touch on was the Dunlop deal, and Dunlop being the exclusive tire.
How is that? Let's talk about it a little bit. How is that? Is it just, has it been just a crazy workload increase? But at the same time, I mean, I spoke to Brian Fleck, you know, 3 weeks ago or a month ago, and he said, man, we've learned a lot, and it's really cool working with these guys, and it's going to help our company. And, you know, how is that?
You know what? I think it's, I'm a Dunlop person by heart. I've been affiliated with that company since the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the only tire company when I got into this sport, and they might be the only tire company when I get out of it. You never know. But, I mean, I think like anything, they got you know, a little bit lazy in a few years of testing, and another company had come up with some good product, and we won't mention any names, you know. But I mean, anyways, hard because Dunlop never had any. We had Team Honda and some great riders, but you know, every bike's different, so every bike requires different tire setup for their chassis and suspension settings. And you know what? We knew when Bridgestone pulled out at the end of last year that there's an opportunity there that we had to jump on. And, you know, we jumped on it, and everybody thought it was going to be I think even some of the teams, you know, like Pro Circuit and that, thought it was going to be too much for us to handle. But, again, like I said, we got a great group of guys. And I know from experience, and I've even talked with Brian and Brock, and I said, you know what, if we're organized and we're prepared and we attack this with the right manner, we can conquer it. It's not going to be that hard. You know what? It's hard every weekend to do what we have to do, but it's not nothing that we keep everybody in sync with, not let anybody down, and we plan not to let nobody down in the future. You know, so I think preparation is the biggest a formula to success, and I think we're prepared. We're learning stuff every week. The tires are getting better. And it's never ending. There's new stuff coming all the time, and they're not sitting down. They're done, you know, the engineers, Brock, Brian, and everybody within are. They're working hard to make it successful, and I mean, we're very fortunate to have every team. A lot of great. You know, I mean, again, if I had to pick a team that was the best team to work with, they're all great. And everybody at Honda, which has been there through the thick and thin with Dunlop, is, you know, I think, honestly, this is something that I've said a few times, that racing in 2010 has been very, very exciting and interesting. It's very competitive.
It has been.
And you know what? Maybe everybody being on the same tire has made it more competitive. You know what I mean? It's something that gets overlooked. I honestly don't think we're that far behind the competition in the years past. I think it's just, you know, they had some good teams and some good input. So, but, man, look at racing this year. It's very exciting. It's exciting for us to watch. So,
it is. You're right. Good point.
You know, I mean, you look back at it and you go, what is the formula for that? Maybe there isn't. But at the same time, I think you take that one equation out of the factory. You know, I mean, there's some anti, you know, Dunlop people coming into the season, but you know what? Everybody's on the same stuff, and if Ryan Dungey's winning every week on it, there's no reason why someone else can't win on it, you know? So, again, it boils back to when I was a mechanic. It was like, you know what? If you put your head down and want to win, you can win on anything. You could bring back an old Husky and put guys like Bubba Chat or Ryan on that bike, and they're going to win on it because they want to win, you know? So
right, yeah. Good point, Marshall. You're right.
You know, so, but, I mean, again, like I said, it's been fun, and, I mean, heck, people aren't going to be able to listen to this whole podcast. We're likely going to bore some people, but...
You'd be surprised. The podcasts I do with mechanics and industry people, people get into. People really like those ones because a lot of the riders are pretty canned responses, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, and it's kind of funny because you interviewed Brock a few months back, and me working with Brock, he's kind of a... He can get carrying on a conversation, but I might have just beat him in his time limit on the podcast. So
he was 144, I think, or something.
We might have to go another 15 minutes. So I got bragging rights or something, but
I was,
no.
I was surprised. Yeah. I was really surprised at Golden Boy's memory because he can tell you what kind of, you know, how many clicks his compression was in '86 on the John R. tuned YZ490.
Well, you know, again, that's something that maybe we could keep going, but I was around in his era, and I got to, you know, with working with the rollerball. It was back in the day when Brock rode Yamaha, and you know what? He was a Larry Ward of the time, but you know what? Very successful and knew what he wanted, and until this day, he's a very knowledgeable person. I learn something from him every weekend, and I mean, it doesn't matter in what aspect you're talking. I mean, he's very knowledgeable in motorcycles. He's very knowledgeable in the business aspect of race and the business aspect of life. And just, I mean, if, man, I'll tell you what, if there's anybody that you want to ask a question that'll have the answer, he might be the guy. It'd be whatever it is, you know. I mean, you got Google and you got all these search sites on the website. I think maybe Brock might need to have one of his own because he's, I mean, not in a bad way. He's just a very knowledgeable person.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I've spoken to Glover many times, sometimes when he hasn't even liked me either for something that I wrote about Dunlop. But very smart guy, on the ball for sure. No doubt about it.
Yeah, he's been a great asset to Dunlop. I mean, sometimes maybe, a little bit too carried away in some aspects. But, again, that's what makes people successful, and that's why he's where he's at today. So,
right.
Another great person in our sport, you know. I mean, believe it or not, I think our sport has got a lot of history, a lot of knowledge, and a lot of great people. I mean, it's and for if there's families out there listening to this, this is something that I preach in my business every day, that, you know what, racing's a very clean sport. It's, you know, you can look at baseball, you can look at any other sport out there, and there's always negative press. And if you look at over the years of our sport, it's been very little of that. And I think that's something that we all should be proud of, you know?
Yeah, well said. Well, thank you, Marshall, for doing the BTOsports.com Transworld Motocross Podcast. I greatly appreciate it.
No problem. I appreciate it too, Steven. Thanks.
I will see you this weekend, right, man?
Yeah, I'll be there, man. I'll be there in a couple of days, so we'll see you there. And, again, have a great rest of the week.
All right, you too. Talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Yep, bye.
Bye.
This has been the BTOsports.com podcast show, brought to you by Transworld Motocross. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows, including motocross legends such as
The Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point to where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, you know, that I was going to miss.
The daughter, Ron Lachine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like beating a dead horse. I mean, you know, and I know from personal experience, did anybody ever sit me down? Of course, everybody did.
Pro Circuits, Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
Seven-time Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I pulled pick and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
The O Show, Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you'd sit there if you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Search Mathis on the iTunes Store to find these and many more great podcasts. I won't let this die. You know I've got this fan up in the atmosphere.